tone calm. Was it a vampire? He wanted to shout that yes, yes, it was a vampire, and that vampire was someone near and dear to him. And he was so confused at this point about how exactly he was supposed to feel about it that he felt like imploding. But he couldn't, because that would mean that the society might be wrong about vampires, and that Henry might be right about Vlad. Josh stuck the axe into an oversized log then and shook his head. I don't know what you're talking about. Henry looked more irritated than Joss had ever seen him. He was holding it together surprisingly well. Joss wondered how long his calm demeanor could possibly last. Henry's eyes widened as Joss stepped past him toward the house. He placed a hand on Joss's shoulder, stopping him. Dude, if a vampire attacked me, I have a right to know. Joss shook him off, more roughly than he needed to. And if I said it was a vampire, what then? Would you defend them then? Of course not. They're not all good. No group of any kind of person is all good. Henry stood there, demanding Joss's attention, his eyes full of a fire that threatened to spread wildly. But he looked like he was desperately trying to prevent it from doing so. Only Joss couldn't understand why. So? Joss threw up his arms. He was raising his voice to a near shout, but couldn't stop himself. So much anger and guilt and remorse and embarrassment was filling him that Joss thought that he might just explode into a cloud of ash. Yes! Yes, okay? A vampire knocked you unconscious. He shoved Henry back with both palms hard. Henry stumbled, but righted himself immediately. Why are you getting so ticked off? Because Henry was here, asking him questions about things he didn't want to talk about. Because Cyrus was alive and a vampire and not his real dad. Because his family was in shambles and no amount of pretending could hide that fact from the world. Because his sister was dead and it was his job to avenge her. Joss was mad for all these reasons and more. But worse than any of that, he was losing it completely. He had to get away from Henry and regain his composure before he did or said something really stupid. As if a light had gone on over Henry's head, he said, "Did you kill him?" In Joss's mind, he saw the cabin from 2 summers ago exploding, the flames and debris flying outward. Then he saw Cyrus's face as it had been just a few hours ago in the woods, his smile, still so kind, still so warm. His heart regretted feeling the elation that it had at the sight of him, but it was undeniable that he had felt it. Stunned at his own confusion, Joss slowly shook his head. No, no, I didn't kill it. So he got away. No wonder you're mad. I'm not mad, and... He shook his head. He was so tired of lying, but it felt like the only way out. Yeah, basically it got away. Henry folded his arms across his chest. Basically. Let's just get inside and eat some pizza, okay? I really don't feel like talking to you about vampires anymore. Joss started back toward the house, his thoughts racing. Why was his cousin doing this? This was all Henry's fault. If Henry hadn't been asking so many stupid questions, Joss wouldn't have to think about Cyrus or his family or anything unpleasant that was going on. He would still be lost in the mundane task of chopping wood. Overwhelmed, he spun around and shoved Henry again. Why can't you just admit how dangerous they are? Henry shoved him back, his words right on the heels of his action. I thought you didn't want to talk about them anymore. Well, now I do. Why, Henry? Nope, sorry. We're done. Henry brushed past him. You don't want to talk anymore? That's fine. Or maybe you could kiss my... Joss grabbed his cousin by the shirt. It was only after he'd balled up his fist that he realized that he meant to hurt Henry. Slowly, he lowered his hand and released his cousin, who looked as if his temper had been pushed to the absolute brink. But, try as Joss might to change it, his tone was still full of venom. Why? Henry shook his head, like Joss were a sad, pathetic person who was blind to the ways of the world. Joss instantly despised him for it and immediately regretted that emotion. because they're not all dangerous. They're not all good or all bad. You seem to think that the word vampire is the same as the word evil, and that's not true. Joss shook his head. He wasn't the blind one here. And you seem to think that the word slayer and the word murderer are one and the same, and that's not true. I'm defending mankind with my actions. Things aren't always what they seem, Henry. There was a moment when neither spoke, but it wouldn't last. It couldn't last. Henry made his way to the side door, and as he opened it, he turned back to face his cousin. That's exactly the point I've been trying to make about Vlad. Things aren't what they seem. When are you going to realize that? As the screen door slapped closed behind Henry, Joss shouted, "When are you?" As he stood there in the growing darkness, Joss realized two things. One, he was growing ever certain that he and his cousin would never again be as close as they once were. And two, if Henry was going to survive the next month in a town where vampires were roaming free, Joss was going to have to keep him close. Oh yes, he thought as he moved toward his house and the smell of pepperoni pizza within. The Slayer Society was going to love this plan. 7. Cecile's eyes. It was a noise that woke him that night, though in his half-conscious state, it was difficult for Joss to remember exactly what that noise had been. Curiosity, more than alarm, kept him wondering, kept him guessing, and finally, Joss opened his eyes. His bedroom was empty, as far as he could see in the darkness. No stray animals, no unexpected guests, just him, his stuff, and the cool breeze blowing his curtains farther into the room. He relaxed back into his mattress and had just sighed a sleepy, relieved sigh when he heard the noise again. It sounded like the creaking of floorboards. Joss tried to ignore it. Maybe it was just the house settling. Then he heard it again. Creak. Wide awake at the sound, Joss listened to his heart hammer in his ears. He was ashamed of himself instantly. What kind of slayer hides under his covers at the first discovery of some unexplainable noise? It was ridiculous. Slowly, he pushed the sheet back from his legs and sat up on the edge of his bed, looking around. Nothing. Just his room. Just his stuff. Just the breeze. Feeling more than a little stupid, Joss cursed himself for being so needlessly on edge. He was just about to slip back under his covers when he heard it again. Creak! Joss's heart immediately picked up its pace. It was coming from down the hall. More specifically than that, it sounded like it was coming from Henry's room. With his stake gripped firmly in his hand, Joss opened his bedroom door and crept down the hall. As he pushed Henry's partially open door open even more, he thought about the night that he had lost Cecile. He remembered it like it was yesterday. He'd been awoken by a sound in the middle of the night. He'd crept down the hall to his baby sister's room, and when he peered inside her open door, he saw a vampire looming over her sleeping form. Only she wasn't sleeping. Cecile was dead. He pushed the door open, and what he saw sent his heart into his throat. Someone was standing beside Henry's bed, looking down on him. At first, Joss couldn't focus on who or what it was that was standing there. He could only stare at his cousin and wait for any sign that Henry was still alive. When Henry's chest rose in a deep breath, Joss sighed in relief, but there was still the other matter. An invader was standing in his home, just inches from his unguarded cousin. Joss readied his weapon and stepped into the room, closing the door behind him. Only then did he recognize who was standing in the dark of Henry's room. Her blonde, curly hair was unmistakable, and Joss knew that if she looked at him, it would be with black, tunnel eyes. He was dreaming. He had to be dreaming. It was Cecile, and he only ever saw Cecile in his dreams. Recalling his former nightmares, Joss was hesitant to ask her what she was doing here. He didn't want an answer, didn't want to know. Because sooner or later, this dream Cecile would try to kill him, and Joss just couldn't bear it anymore. So instead he stood there in the darkness, watching the way the breeze brushed her hair back from her face. He wished that she'd look at him then, and when she did, that he'd see her pretty blue eyes. But those were gone. Only filthy black tunnels remained in their stead. He knew that much. Only this nightmarish version of Cecile remained, because his Cecile, his cherub of a sister, was gone. Gone forever. And it was all Joss's fault. Refusing to speak, to engage her in any way, Joss just stood there silently and looked at her, waiting for something horrible to happen. But when she turned her head toward him, something was very different from his other nightmares about Cecile. Her fingers weren't filthy claws. Her hair wasn't half covering her face, and her eyes. Even in the dark of night, he could see that they were blue. She looked sad as she watched him, and Joss couldn't resist taking a step toward her. This nightmare was unlike any that had come before it. They had all felt incredibly real, but in this one, Cecile seemed different somehow, more present. Joss debated speaking to her, but what would he say? Just as he decided to ask her what she was doing here, what she wanted from him, and if she could ever find it in her restless heart to forgive him for having failed to save her life, Cecile stepped closer to Henry's bed. Joss hesitated, fearful of what might happen. When nothing did, he parted his lips to speak. But it was Cecile who spoke instead. In a hushed, child's whisper, she said,
"This was my bed."
Joss looked at the guest room bed. She was right. It was the same frame that she used to sleep on. It was, technically, Cecile's old bed. His parents had kept the frame, painted it, and created a guest room that almost never had guests. Joss glanced at his sleeping cousin. A line of drool ran from Henry's mouth to the sheets. It reminded Joss of the line of blood that had run from Cecile's mouth to her sheets. The scenes were strangely similar.
"Go back to sleep, Jossie."
Sleep? What on earth could she mean by that? Did she want him to sleep? Was that even possible to do within a dream? Or was she telling him to sleep more? To face her nightmarish images, to stop running from his rest so that he might escape her. He was about to ask what she meant, but the words were stolen from his throat when Cecile opened her mouth. Inside were two perfect white fangs. Once again, his sister was a monster. Once again, she was a reminder of his absolute failure. She shouted,
"Sleep, now!"
Darkness overtook him, swirling in around him like liquid. He bolted up in bed, and as he brought his hand from underneath his pillow, he realized that he was gripping his stake so tightly that his hand ached. In his half-asleep state, he jumped from his bed, searching his room for any sign of the nightmare that was his younger sister. Of course there was nothing. Of course. Because it had all just been another bad dream. They would never stop. He would never be free of this guilt. Joss turned to climb back into bed, back under the comfort of his covers, but stopped, frozen in place. His bedroom window, which he was certain had been open when he went to bed the first time, was now closed. As Joss stood there, his fingers trembling, his heartbeat racing in fear and wonder, Cyrus's words echoed through his memory. "Trust your dreams." 8. At long last. After tossing and turning for much of the night, and trying to recall whether his window had actually been open when he went to bed or if he was simply misremembering, Joss finally crawled out of bed with the reluctance of someone who could have used another 6 or 7 hours of sleep. He stretched his arms overhead, reveling in how great it made the muscles feel in his back, then scratched his head and yawned. There was no denying it. It was morning. Might as well face the inevitable. He was increasingly surprised, given the time, that his dad hadn't yet screamed him out of bed. But at the same time, Joss was relieved. For once, he'd been allowed to sleep in. If only he'd actually been able to, you know, sleep. He grabbed some clean clothes and hurried through a shower. Today he was planning to visit the family home of the second person on his list. It was so strange to work on a case for the Slayer Society without the help of his fellow Slayers, and stranger still to be working on a case here at home. It almost felt like he wasn't acting as a Slayer at all. It felt as if the presence of Cyrus had been no more real than the dream he'd had about Cecile. It felt as if his past, his memories, were chasing him like shadows. Not at all like he was actively investigating the mysterious deaths of four people. Joss looked at his reflection and frowned. He needed to take his job more seriously. He needed to hunt down the killer or killers of these people and determine whether or not they're vampires. And he needed to do it before another name was added to the list. As he brushed his teeth, he tilted his head at his reflection in contemplation. Cyrus was a vampire. What if these murders were all Cyrus's handiwork? It was possible, he thought, as he spat in the sink and rinsed his toothbrush in the running water. Anything was possible. So maybe Cyrus was the killer. And maybe still, Joss would have to take his life at some point, even though he desperately didn't want to. Something he could never, ever admit to anyone. According to the Slayer Society, it was his duty as a Slayer to kill all vampires, first and foremost those that have proven to be an immediate threat to humans. The simple truth was that Cyrus was a vampire. Cyrus was a threat to humans. No matter how else that Joss might feel about him. Therefore, it was Joss's job to kill Cyrus, his duty, his mission in life. To not kill Cyrus would be a huge insult to the society and all that it stood for, the same way that it had been an insult to the society for Vlad to be allowed to live. The fact that Vlad still lived troubled Joss. So why was Joss even considering letting Cyrus live? He placed his palms on either side of the sink and let his head drop with a heavy sigh. He didn't know. He didn't know why he couldn't just do his job and move on to the next one. He didn't know why it meant so much to him to see Cyrus's smile or to know that he'd survived that explosion. He just knew that those things had mattered to him and that the society would frown on that. As he raised his head, he didn't meet his reflection's eyes. He couldn't. He tidied up the mess he'd made in the bathroom before heading downstairs to the kitchen, where his mother was sitting quietly. On the table in front of her were three bottles of medication. Beside that was her half-empty mug of black coffee. She was still wearing her robe, her hair, curly like Cecile's, still looking wild, as if she'd only gotten out of bed a few minutes before. Joss wondered if she was sleeping well at night, or if she was having nightmares too. He wondered a lot of things about his mother, but was afraid to ask. After heating up a Pop-Tart and eating half of it, he took a seat across from her at the table. "Morning, Mom." She blinked before smiling at him, as if she had only just now become aware that her son had entered the room.
"Oh, Joss. Good morning. Did you have breakfast yet?"
He glanced at his plate. "Yeah." It wasn't her fault that she was lost in her own world half the time. It was her depression. It was her medication. It was her sorrow. Joss didn't blame her for any of it. Eyeing the prescription bottles, Joss took another bite of his Pop-Tart and said, "Do those things really make you feel better?" At first, she didn't answer. Then, as if realizing that her son had been speaking to her and not his breakfast, she said,
"Hmm? Oh, the pills? Sometimes I think. Sometimes I wonder."
Sometimes Joss wondered, too. He believed in the importance of medication and the treatment of depression, but it was difficult to see if all of these pills were good for his mom. "Hey, Mom, I know this sounds stupid, but I have to say it, because I don't know if any of those doctors have told you or not." He furrowed his brow, uncertain whether or not he was doing the right thing. Then he placed a hand on hers and squeezed. When she met his eyes, he said,
"It's okay to feel sad. Sometimes I feel sad, too. Sometimes I feel so sad about what happened to Cecile, that I don't know if I can bear another day going by without her. But then I remember that the sadness can't last forever, and I can face another day. Maybe we have to experience sadness to truly appreciate the good stuff, you know?
He didn't want to see it, but halfway through his statement, his mom's eyes fogged over. He'd lost her again, to the pills, to the pain, to something that he couldn't even hope to control. He'd lost his mom, and it was almost worse than losing Cecile. She blinked at him once again.
Do you want some breakfast?
His heart felt heavy. As he stood to rinse his plate off in the sink, he said, No thanks. His mom went back to sipping her coffee. He wondered what it must be like inside the protective world that she'd built all around herself on the day that Cecile had died. He hoped it was a pleasant place and that she could find some semblance of happiness and peace there, in the way that she couldn't out here in the real world. Joss glanced longingly at the coffee maker before speaking again.
Is Henry up yet?
In that distracted, overly medicated way that she had of speaking, she said,
There was a notice on the door. It said there was a package at the post office. Before he left for work, your father asked Henry to pick it up.
Joss nodded. He really wanted to start investigating the details of the next victim's death, but couldn't really do so without worrying that Henry was finding trouble somewhere. Largely trouble with Fangs.
Do you know when he'll be back?
Not for a while, I imagine,
she blinked, remembering. The fog lifted briefly from her eyes.
He called just a minute ago. He met a girl, so they're grabbing breakfast together at that little cafe on the boardwalk.
Joss shook his head. Henry had been in town for just a few days and he was already hooking up with some girl. Some things never changed.
What cafe?
Next to the comic book shop. You know the one. That nice man, Edgar Frog, owns it.
Joss immediately rolled his eyes. Edgar Frog was a nutjob who'd inherited the comic book shop from his parents. He claimed quite publicly that his brother had been taken by vampires and that he, in fact, was a vampire killer for hire. The guy was nuts and wouldn't know a real slayer if one staked him through the chest. After placing his plate in the sink, Joss refilled his mom's coffee mug and headed back upstairs. He had to trust that his cousin was remotely safe on the boardwalk, far away from the woods, and his dad was off at work, giving Joss a few hours of peace and quiet. So it was time to do a little research on the woman who died in a rather unusual manner. He headed upstairs to his bedroom, hit the power button on his laptop, and got to work. After an hour of research, Joss had focused in on two important facts. One, the woman died at her house, which was located close to the very boardwalk that his cousin was currently hanging out at. And two, the woman had apparently died in a freak accident involving her falling on her gardening shears and almost beheading herself. Joss sat back after he'd read that last little tidbit over and over again. What person was stupid enough to believe that that woman's death could be anything other than the result of a vampire encounter? It seemed so obvious to Joss. But then maybe that was just how Joss's brain was wired. Of course, her husband may have killed her. Crazy people did crazy things. With gardening shears, apparently. He powered down his laptop and closed it, debating whether he should investigate the crime scene first or check on Henry. With any luck, Henry was in good hands, cute, manicured hands. So he made a decision and grabbed his backpack, feeling better already at the heft of it on his shoulder. Inside was his slayer kit, and everything that he needed to take down a vampire in case he ran into one. All but his stake, which he wore in the leather holster on his hip, tucked secretly beneath the fabric of his shirt. He headed downstairs and outside, ready to check out the woman's house, or more specifically, her garden, where she'd died. It didn't take him long to reach the dead woman's house, and when he got there, it seemed to be the opposite of gloom, the antithesis of what someone might think of when they thought about a murder scene. The house itself was painted a pretty shade of yellow with bright white trim. Lush gardens surrounded it, encased by a white picket fence. A quaint cobblestone walkway led from the gate at the sidewalk up to the front door, where large hanging ferns lined the large porch.
The home was a place of happiness, that much was obvious. So he wondered if new owners had taken over, or if the woman's husband, who'd been mentioned in the articles that Joss had read, was still living here. He thought it might be better if her husband had no idea why Joss was there. Pushing the gate open, Joss crept through and moved to the window closest to the walkway. He thought if he could get a peek at whether or not anyone was home, it might be easier to really search the garden, to determine if there were any other remaining details that would solidify his vampire theory. To his relief, when he looked through the window, he saw no one. Then Joss turned around to find a very large, very angry-looking man wearing bib overalls and staring at him as if he were a criminal. In a way, Joss supposed he was. He was technically trespassing, after all. The man grunted.
"Who are you? What do you want? What are you doing out here?"
Joss immediately plastered a pleasant, apologetic smile on his face. "I'm so sorry. My name's Harry. Harry Bossmeyer. I'm in the horticulture club at my school, and as I was walking by, I noticed your lovely garden. I rang the bell, but I guess you didn't hear it. I was hoping to talk to whoever planted all this." Joss was surprised by how easily the lie had formed in his mind and exited his mouth. Now his only hope was that the man had bought it. That would be the true test. By the look on the man's face, Joss was willing to bet that he didn't believe a word of what Joss was saying. There was no telling how this conversation would go, but at the moment, Joss was just hoping to leave with his head still attached. After a long silence, during which the man eyed Joss suspiciously, he grunted again.
"That'd be my wife. She passed on about a week ago, though. Sorry, I can't help you."
Joss shook his head, frowning. On one hand, he was relieved the guy had bought his story. On the other, he felt bad for him. He hated to lie, but his sympathy, at least, was real. "Oh, I'm so sorry. If I had had any idea, I wouldn't have brought it up."
"That's okay, boy. How are you to know?"
He shrugged, and when he did, his eyes glistened. This man wasn't a psycho. This man was in mourning.
"Tilly loved her flowers. She spent hours out here every day, pruning, watering, making everything just so."
It was clear by the look in his eye that he'd loved that aspect of his wife's personality. She sounded like she was nurturing and caring. And he looked like he missed her more than anybody could ever possibly understand.
"It was an accident, what happened to Tilly. I found her over there by the side of the house, lying sprawled out by the creeping ivy. I wanted to bury her by the violets near the back door, but there are laws, you know."
He nodded to himself, his face drawn and sad. Joss was certain that he'd never seen anyone look so alone before.
"Anyway, I just water 'em now. Don't know really much about gardening. Sorry I can't help you."
Before Joss could say anything more, the man moved up the steps to the porch and opened his door, ready to disappear into his house. He probably wasn't used to sharing his grief with the world, and Joss had forced his way in and made him do it. Joss felt terrible. He called after the man.
"That's okay. I'm sorry about your wife."
"Feel free to pick some flowers for your club. Tilly would have liked that."
The man waved and went inside. As Joss made his way back out the gate, he felt like a real tool. There had to have been a better, gentler way of handling that kind of situation. He just wasn't certain what that was. He turned his head back to the house and glimpsed the ivy, where Tilly's husband had found her body. Briefly, he wondered whether or not her body had been drained of blood, and if such a thing might be noted under her cause of death by the coroner. Again, that word, messy, filled his head. If a vampire had killed Tilly, it wasn't an experienced one. It was one acting out of desperation, out of intense hunger. He thought about Tilly and about her husband all the way to the cafe. As he passed by Frog Brothers comic book shop, Joss glanced inside. He could see Edgar in there, touting some dramatic tale of creatures with fangs to several tourists. Joss just rolled his eyes and kept walking. Amateurs. The small cafe next door seemed to be bustling with activity, and Joss wondered if Henry would even still be inside or if he'd taken too long talking to Tilly's husband. But as he stepped inside, he immediately spied Henry sitting in a booth at the far end of the cafe. Sitting across from him was a very pretty girl, her hair dyed in a rainbow of bright, unnatural colors. She was dressed in combat boots, fishnet tights, black shorts, and a t-shirt. And as Joss approached, he felt every single one of the alarm bells in his brain go off simultaneously. She glanced over at him when he reached the booth and smiled. All he could do was stare. Henry looked at Joss and gestured to his new friend. Oh, hey, Joss. This is Kat. As he locked eyes with Kat, with Cyrus's daughter, with his sworn enemy, Joss's heart seized inside his chest. The only words he could think to speak were, I know. Kat smiled at him. Whether it was because she was happy to see him after so long, or because she was poised to kill him momentarily, he had no idea. He just knew that she was here. After years of threatening his life and of seeking vengeance for her father's untimely demise at Joss's hand, Kat was in Santa Carla, sharing an oversized breakfast burrito with Henry McMillan. 9. There are worse things. What do you mean you know? You two know each other? Henry looked more than a little irritated, like Joss was trying to hedge in on his territory with the cute girl he'd just met. His concerns couldn't be further from the truth, of course. Joss was more worried about Kat killing him than kissing him, but Henry had no way of knowing that. Oh, Joss and I go way back. I've actually been counting the days till I saw him again. Betty's been dying to run into me. The edges of her smile curled a bit, and Joss's head ached from the amount of tension in his spine. He knew what she was doing. She was trying to intimidate him, but it wasn't going to work, because he wasn't going to let it work. People can only really bother you if you let them. What have you been up to, Kat? He left off the part where he asked if she'd been stalking him in any other way but by text message. Briefly, he wondered if she had texted him since his dad had confiscated his cell phone, but he didn't ask. He wasn't that curious about anything that Kat did or didn't do. She raised a perfectly manicured eyebrow at him, and Joss couldn't help but notice how incredibly hot Kat had become since he'd last seen her. Ironically, her t-shirt read Cool Chick on the front. She leaned forward, holding his gaze. Against his will, he wondered if she thought he'd gotten better looking, too. I could ask the same of you, Joss. The only difference is that I know what you've been up to. The question is, does Henry? It was a threat, plain and simple. It didn't make any difference at all that the threat was coming out of pretty, glossed, perfectly kissable Cupid's bow lips. Joss glared at her. Henry knows as much as he needs to know about my comings and goings. But does he agree with them? Her eyes moved down his arms and back to his eyes, and Joss got the impression that she was checking him out, against her will. Maybe they had more in common than he thought. Henry chimed in with an exasperated tone. Excuse me, I'm still right here, and in case either of you is wondering, my hearing totally works. Sorry, Henry. Joss tore his gaze from Kat long enough to cast Henry an apologetic glance. He hadn't meant to push Henry out of the conversation. He was just feeling really conflicted about seeing Kat again after so long. On one hand, he and Kat had grown very close in a short period of time. She'd been there for him through the trials of his initial Slayer training. She'd been a lighthouse to him in many ways. But after Cyrus had died, she'd become a threat to his existence. Joss swallowed hard in realization. Cyrus. Cyrus was still alive. Did Kat know? Did she have any idea? She traced a heart on the back of Henry's right hand with her finger. Her nails were painted in purple glitter polish. Sorry.
The look on Henry's face said that he forgave her immediately. I have to use the restroom. Henry slid out of the booth and pointed a warning finger straight at Joss. Be careful what you do. Joss felt his face flush red. Henry might as well have screamed at him not to make out with Cat while he was gone. As if Joss wanted anything to do with that activity. Betraying him, Joss's eyes traced a line from Cat's sparkling eyes down her cheekbone to her lips. No, he didn't want anything to do with Cat in that way. They were once friends, now enemies. Besides, there was a girl in pink who lived in Bathory that Joss couldn't get out of his mind. He had to focus on that girl, not this one. This one wasn't good for him. This one was trouble. He didn't respond to Henry at all, just dropped his gaze to the table and tried to keep it there. After Henry had gone, Cat gestured to the seat across from her and said, "You might as well sit down." He stood there stubbornly for a moment, silently debating whether or not sitting in a booth with Cat could be considered fraternizing with the enemy. Once he decided that it was more like reconnaissance than anything, he slid into Henry's seat and looked at her. What are you doing here exactly, Cat?
You know why I'm here, Joss. It's time for me to get revenge for what you took from me, for what you did to Cyrus.
When she uttered her father's name, the strength that seemed to ebb from her faltered. Her voice shook as she spoke it aloud, evidence of the pain that she must still be feeling. Pain that Joss had never intended to cause. Without thinking, he reached across the table and cupped her hand in his. To his amazement, she didn't pull away. Listen, Cat, about Cyrus.
Help!
A woman burst through the doors into the cafe, a panicked look in her eye, drawing the attention of every person in the cafe, even Henry, who just then exited the restroom. Her chest was rising and falling in quick breaths, as if she'd been running.
A man needs help! Somebody call an ambulance! A man was just attacked!
No one in the cafe moved, no one but Joss, who jumped up from his seat and hurried outside, pushing past the people who were frozen in shock that something violent had just occurred in their vicinity. As he moved out the door, he saw a man in his mid-twenties lying on the ground in a pool of blood, his skin paling as the seconds ticked by, his neck bleeding profusely. He was losing blood, a lot of blood, and if someone didn't do something quickly, the man was going to die. Joss pulled his overshirt off and knelt beside the wounded man, pressing his shirt into the man's neck. Keeping pressure on it might be enough to save him, but not without professional help. He looked at one of the onlookers and made sure the man met his eyes, then calmly but firmly said, "You, call an ambulance right now. Tell them this man has had his carotid artery severed and has lost a lot of blood. They need to hurry." The man nodded and pulled out his cell phone. Once he dialed and was actually speaking to someone, Joss relaxed a bit. That was the thing about people in a crisis situation. No one would take responsibility unless you handed it to them. His overshirt had soaked through, but he kept the pressure on. The man's face was turning white. With one hand keeping pressure on the wound, Joss removed his t-shirt with his other hand, pulling it off over his head. He pressed it into the overshirt as hard as he could without strangling the poor man. A group of people was gathering and chatter moved like a wave through the crowd, but Joss didn't take any of it in. The woman who'd entered the cafe had come back outside and was standing beside the man, wringing her hands in worry. Joss met her eyes and spoke calmly. "Did you see who did this?"
"Hard to remember. It's all a blur."
She shook her head, looking very much as if she felt she wasn't being much help at all. What she didn't realize was that she'd just told Joss some pretty key information about the attack. She had difficulty remembering the face, which suggested mind control, which meant that it was a vampire that had attacked this man, further evidenced by the gushing neck wound. Messy, messy, messy. A man in a tan polo shirt stepped forward and said,
"Whatever it was that got him ran down the boardwalk and into the woods right after. I saw him. Must have been a psycho or something. Do you think it could be a serial killer?"
Joss didn't bother explaining that in order to be a serial killer, there needed to be a series of similar deaths.
In the distance, he heard an ambulance siren. He gestured for the man to kneel beside him and then put the man's hands on the t-shirt in place of his own. Keep pressure on this, and keep people away from the woods. Where exactly did you see the attacker go?
Across the street from the boardwalk entrance, straight into the trees. Be careful, kid. Maybe you should wait for the authorities.
The man's eyes widened, and Joss nodded in response. He wasn't about to tell the guy that when it came to vampire attacks, he was one of the authorities. He hurried away from the scene, down the boardwalk. As he moved, the ambulance passed him, and he hoped they'd be able to save the victim. It was only then that it occurred to him that his stake had been exposed to all of the people on the scene. He wondered if any of them saw it there on his hip, and if they had any idea what it was. Once he reached the end of the boardwalk, he stepped into the woods and slipped his stake from the holster, ready for anything. He hoped, anyway. The woods seemed eerily still as he slowly made his way deeper inside. No birds sang songs above him in the trees. No breeze rustled the leaves overhead. No woodland creatures stirred in the undergrowth. It seemed to be just Joss in the woods, nothing more. But he knew that was not true. Joss scanned the area around him, and as he turned his head to the right, he saw it. That vital piece of evidence that he'd been looking for. That thing that told him that he was on the right path to locating whoever, or whatever, had attacked that man on the boardwalk. On the leaf of a low-growing fern, there on the forest floor, was a single fresh droplet of blood. He knelt beside it to get a better look. There was no denying how fresh it was, but he could only guess that it had come from the wounded man. He only hoped that the attacker hadn't been Cyrus, but there was only one way to find out. Standing, his fingers gripping his stake, Joss straightened his shoulders and called out,
"Cyrus! It's Joss!"
There was a slight breeze, barely enough to move a few of Joss's hairs out of his eyes. He might not have noticed it, except there had been nothing before it at all, giving weight to the action. Suddenly, a vampire was standing just inches from him, staring him down with a gleam in his eye that suggested that he was hungry or angry, or both.
"A pleasure to make your acquaintance, Joss. But I'm not Cyrus."
Joss tried to bring his stake up, but the beast moved with that unbelievable vampire speed again, grabbing Joss by the wrist that held the stake. He shook his head slowly.
"You don't want to start anything with me, boy. Trust me."
As quickly as he could move, Joss rolled his wrist to the outside, breaking the vampire's grip. He brought the stake around, aiming for its chest, but as he did so, the vampire swore. It shoved Joss hard, sending him flying. A moment later, Joss struck a tree's trunk with his back. When he hit, his lungs seized momentarily, knocking the wind from him. At the same time, his hand opened, releasing the stake. It fell to the ground, but Joss had no idea where. As his body collapsed to the forest floor, he searched, but it was gone. He was unarmed and completely unsure of how he was going to get out of this situation. The nameless vampire jumped, coming at him, but Joss rolled to his right before springing to his feet. As he did, he turned and brought his foot up, roundhouse kicking the creature in the side. The force of his kick sent the surprised vampire into a nearby tree. Thinking quickly, Joss grabbed it by the shoulder and threw it into another tree. Only the vampire was thinking quicker. With surprising grace, it planted its feet on the tree trunk and ran up the side of the tree before flipping over and landing behind Joss. As Joss turned to face it, the creature caught him with a right hook. As its fist met with Joss's cheek, it felt like his head had exploded. Pain vibrated through his skull, but he wasn't going to let pain stand in his way. Joss spun around, backhanding the beast. As it stumbled, Joss caught it in the ribs with his knee. The vampire tumbled to the ground where Joss kicked it hard in the side. Angrily, it shouted up at him, "Stop, Joss! You don't know what you're doing!" Miraculously, his stake was lying right beside the vampire. Joss grabbed it and raised it in the air as quickly as he could. "For you, Cecile!" He planted his stake hard in the vampire's chest. The vampire screamed, clutching at the wood, his eyes full of disbelief. Then, as the light was leaving its eyes, it said,
"Be careful, little Slayer. I'm not the worst thing in these woods."
Joss sat back, panting from their fight. He was about to ask the vampire what it had meant when he realized that it was dead. He looked around the woods with the question instead in his eyes. 10. Caught in the act. Joss had no idea how he was supposed to request a cleanup without a cell phone, but it was probably a good idea that he stop by Patty's house on the way home to report in. He was hoping that maybe Patty had a shirt he could wear as well, and that maybe she wouldn't mind if he took a shower there. As Joss freed his stake from the vampire's corpse, he heard a sound. Spinning around, he was ready for anything, but what he saw was his cousin Henry, standing there staring at him in disbelief and horror. Not two steps behind him was Kat, looking just a little bit smug and a little bit sad. Joss had no idea what to say. He couldn't explain the vampire's death any more than he could explain why he was holding the stake, and he certainly hadn't wanted his cousin to see him like this. It was one thing for Henry to know that Joss was a slayer. It was quite another for him to see Joss in action, or at least in the immediate aftermath of a takedown. Henry stepped forward and looked from Joss to the vampire and back. At first, Joss thought he was going to say something about what a horrible thing it was that Joss had done, or that maybe he'd ask Joss if the vampire had attacked him. But Henry reacted in a way that, for whatever reason, Joss hadn't been expecting. Without a word, Henry drew his arm back and punched Joss in the gut. Hard. It hurt, but Joss's slayer instincts were stronger than pain. Before he knew it, he had Henry by the wrist, twisted around and pinned with his face against a tree. Kat beat at his back, screaming, "Stop it! You'll break his arm, Joss!" With a shaking breath, Joss released his cousin and stepped back in utter shock at his own actions. He hadn't meant to grab Henry like that. Who knows what he might have done if Kat hadn't stopped him.
"Henry, are you okay? Did he hurt you?"
Kat looked over Henry's wrist with obvious upset. She glared at Joss and tried to gently coax Henry away.
"Come on. We need to get that checked out right away. It might be broken. I can't believe you call that guy your friend. Family's one thing, but who does that to a friend?"
Henry cradled his wrist in his hand, his fingers paling and shaking slightly. Joss wondered if it really was broken. Henry shouted back to Joss, who was standing beside the vampire's corpse in a daze. "You're a monster, Joss! You know that?" And Joss did. He did know that. He was a monster. But at least the people of Santa Carla were safe now. The last thing Henry said to him before disappearing with Kat was softer spoken, but still immeasurably angry.
"I can't believe you did this."
Joss couldn't help but feel like Kat had gotten what she wanted for the moment. With a deep sigh, he looked slowly around at the forest that surrounded him, slipping his stake back into the leather holster on his hip with complete disregard of the blood that was still coating its surface. One thought played on repeat in his mind. The thing about monsters is that there's always something worse out there. 11. Curiosity and the Cat. Joss stood still with his thoughts, going over in his mind what had just transpired, for several minutes after doing what he could to hide the vampire's remains until a Slayer Society cleanup crew could step in and take care of things. He'd covered the body with fallen leaves, fallen branches, and hoped that no human would find it. Death wasn't something that humans typically dealt well with. It also wasn't, Joss thought, something that Slayers dealt with either. The distinction in his mind between human and Slayer had come suddenly, but it seemed to fit. He didn't feel like a human half the time. He felt like something that operated on the fringe of humanity. He moved through the woods for almost a half mile before exiting, not wanting anyone who had been at the boardwalk to see him and wonder why he was spattered with fresh blood and who that blood might belong to. He didn't go home. Too many questions were waiting for him there. Questions that his parents might ask about why he was shirtless and bloody. Questions that Henry might ask about why Joss would do something like that to his cousin, to his blood brother. Blood. There was too much blood in Joss's life. Still dazed by what had just happened, Joss found himself standing in front of Patty's small cottage. After all, she was supposed to be there for him. And if all that meant was that she'd loan him her shower and maybe a fresh shirt, that was enough. It was all Joss needed at the moment, and what he definitely didn't need were questions. He raised his fist to rap on the door, but before he could speak a word, Patty called from within, her voice soft and ragged, as if she'd been crying.
"It's open, Joss. Come on in."
As he turned the knob and pushed, he leaned in and saw her face. Her eyes were red, her cheeks blotched. Patty had been crying. It was a strange thing to see. Patty didn't cry. She was tough. What could break someone like her? He stepped inside, closing the door behind him. "Everything okay?" Her brows came together as she gave him a once-over. As she spoke, she moved toward him, her eyes full of concern.
"Seems like I should be the one asking that. What happened? Are you hurt?"
Joss shook his head and held a hand up, stopping her approach. With the other hand, he gestured to the burgundy flakes that had dried all over his chest and stomach.
"It's not as bad as it looks. Hardly any of it is my blood."
Patty paused mid-step, folded her arms in front of her, and raised an eyebrow. Her eyes were no longer red, her tears moving so quickly into the past that Joss began to wonder whether or not he had imagined them.
"Tell me what isn't yours belongs to that little weenie that runs the comic book shop."
A smirk tugged at the corner of his mouth. Apparently he wasn't the only one who didn't care for Edgar Frog. "No such luck. I stumbled on a vampire attack and took care of business. I did my best to hide the body, but I need a cleanup. Redwood State Park, east side, about 100 yards in."
"Own it."
Patty grabbed her phone off the counter and hit number 2 on speed dial. After giving directions to the mysterious voice on the other end, she hit end and turned back to Joss.
"Do you think this vampire might be the one responsible for the recent deaths?"
Truth be told, Joss didn't want to